Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Hi, and welcome to this week's American Patchwork and Quilting podcast brought to you by Moda Fabrics. I'm Lindsay Fullington, the web editor for American Patchwork and Quilting, and I am taking over for Pat Sloan today. We're going to do a really fun editor's podcast, and I'm here right now with senior editor Elizabeth Beasy and editor Jody Sanders. And the first half hour, we're going to be chatting about some really great reader questions we got on Facebook about some common questions that people had, and they're going to answer the questions. So, hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi. So I will just let you guys take over and answer some of those questions.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Well, one of the first questions that we got was, can washed and unwashed fabrics be used in the same quilt? And so I guess when we're going to answer this, it'll be like all of the questions that we kind of answered. There are some hard and fast rules, but then there are also different schools of thought. And so Jody and I, feel the same on certain things, and we feel differently on certain things. So we're just going to kind of share what we think, and then you can kind of, use the advice or answer that best fits, your sewing style.
A lot of it's personal preference. It's either experience-wise what you have had happen when you've done different things, or that friends or sewing mentors or something. So a lot of it is personal preference. We do have some suggestions of how sometimes we think the best way to do it, but sometimes we don't even agree on what the best way is. So we're going to talk about that today.
Okay. So, back to that first question, combining washed and unwashed fabrics. I guess I am, first of all, I'm a lazy sewer or lazy quilter, so I do not pre-wash anything, but it does scare me a little to have pre-washed and not pre-washed fabrics in the same quilt. And that's scaring me. I just mean that the reason I don't pre-wash fabrics, first of all, I'm lazy, but second of all, I want my fabrics, or I want my quilts to have that puckered antique look after I'm done, so I wash and dry all of my quilts. Your unwashed and your washed fabrics are going to shrink at different rates. And so they might not have that same all-over puckered look. That said, fabrics from different companies do totally vary. And so, there are fabrics with lots of different weaves or, how many threads to the square inch. So, fabrics from different companies probably shrink at different rates. So I guess I wouldn't be too worried about it, but again, I don't worry so much because I don't combine.
I think part of it has to do with the size of pieces you're using as well. So I make a lot of miniature quilts and small things, and I use lots and lots of scraps, and I don't wash and dry everything. I do know people who, the minute it comes in the door, it goes in the washing machine and gets washed and dried, and when it goes in the stash, it's already prepared and ready to go. I make so many things from bits and pieces and leftovers that I don't wash and dry everything. I know I went to a retreat one time and they talked about people having allergies, or if you're in a block swap and people have certain allergies, they do require you to have the fabrics washed ahead of time so that the people that have those allergies to certain things, those blocks aren't intermixed with other ones. So I know sometimes there's reasons for pre-washing, but I'm kind of like you. I don't usually, and again, because it's my personal preference, I don't usually wash and dry my fabrics ahead of time either. Because like you, I love that puckered look of after it's done and it's quilted and you throw it in the washer and dryer and it just puckers up and it really gives that nice, just lived-in worn
texture.
Look. Yeah.
But that's a good point about block swaps. I didn't think about that. I mean, I haven't participated in one in a little while.
And I also think if you're using pre-cuts, I think a lot of people don't know what to do with pre-cuts as well. Some of them have pinked edges, some don't. But if you're throwing small pieces in the laundry, sometimes that can end up just being a mess with all the threads. I know a tip that somebody gave me one time was, if you have a fat quarter, is to clip the corner. Just take a small little triangle out of each corner before you throw it in the washing machine. And then when you dry it, you don't have all those threads and extra things that sometimes come off that issue. Because I think that's one of the things for me is I buy so many fat quarters, and when you're washing and drying those, and you if you put several in a load at one time and you pull them out, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess.
Combined together.
That's, yeah, you're trying to have to tear things apart, and it's just a mess. So that little tip of clipping the corner on each of those corners of the piece that you're watching, that's been really helpful when I have done some pre-washing.
Yeah. And once in a while, I do pre-wash, like, yardage if I'm going to use it for some things, but I don't pre-wash scraps or small, even fat quarters. So,
and I think color fastness, you know, you brought that up earlier. Depending on how old a fabrics you're using, that can make a difference, too. I mean, if you're using fabrics that are 15 years old from your stash, I think the reds, the purples, the blues, sometimes those can fade and run into other fabrics, and that can be a challenge if you have an antique quilt and you're not really sure of the fabrics. It doesn't hurt to do a little bit of a test before you're laundering things from different eras, too, because I think right now the colors are so much more color fast than they used to be, too.
Yeah, I agree. But how many of us, I didn't really think about that, how many old fabrics do I have? And when I mean old, I've got, okay, if you've been quilting for 30 years, I guess.
Right. I just pulled a piece out of, I do a lot of quilting with reproduction fabrics. And I pulled a piece out the other day that I had a 2001 on the salvage part. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I never would have guessed that this fabric was, 15, 14 years old.
Wow.
Because, it was a reproduction from, like, the 1890s. So it looks old. But in terms of being in my stash, it had been in my stash for, 14 or 15 years. And I hadn't even really thought about it. And it was kind of a dark burgundy color. And so I did have some second thoughts about, ooh, maybe I need to do a little test, with this. And that's something you can do, too. If you're concerned about it, you can, do a little test, a little water test, put a little piece of it in some hot water and let it sit there for a little bit and see if you see any bleeding or not. And sometimes that'll give you an indication of what you need to do in terms of washing or not washing.
Mm-hmm. I guess speaking of washing, we had another question that people asked, what's the best way to wash a quilt that's meant to be used? And again, people have certain strong feelings about this. So some people never wash their quilts and believe very strongly that you should, you can use a vacuum hose with a piece of nylons over it, and you just kind of, get the lint or the dirt, or I guess you wouldn't have dirt on a quilt, but, you just run that carefully over the quilt and get some of that off. Some people air their quilts outside in the sun. Wait, do you put them in the sun?
Well, I think what I would do probably if I'm airing it out is I would flip it to the backside so that you don't have fading on the front. And either let it be on a line or put a sheet down first, like on your grass, and then flip it over to the backside. Let it air out. And there may be some smells in it from, a previous owner or, maybe it was at a quilter or something. Anyway, if you're trying to air it out because it has a smell of some kind on it, that's a great way to do that. It's just take it outside, flip it over on the backside, maybe put it on a sheet, and just, let it be out there. I mean, I would take it inside if you're going to have rain or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I think just in regular
You just have
weather.
It out there for a few hours kind of a thing.
Sure.
Just air it.
Yeah, and then if you feel like it's not aired out well enough, go ahead and take it out a day later. Take it out again. I think sometimes running it in the dryer with an air freshener sometimes, kind of can help, too, if you have one of those dryer sheets. Mm-hmm. And, those are scented sometimes. That can help air things out.
So I guess personally, though, what I do, again, we've already talked to Death about how we like quilts that have that antique puckered look. So I, since I do wash and dry all my finished quilts, I don't feel big qualms about putting them in the washer and the dryer later, when they need to be washed.
And I think it depends on the quilt.
Exactly.
I mean, are you getting a baby quilt that you want to be used? You've maybe made it with simpler blocks and simpler quilting, and you want it to be used. You want that quilt to be washed and dried, and it will be.
Exactly.
And I think giving that to somebody who doesn't know about quilts, put it on the label. Put on the label your name, who it was for, the date, and care instructions. I think if you look on the bolt end of most fabrics, there are care instructions. The fabric manufacturers put that on there. I never looked at them or never knew about that until fairly recently, and somebody was saying, it says on the end of each bolt how you should wash the fabric. Most of the time it's in cold water with not very much detergent, probably, or very mild detergent. And so if it's been pre-washed and you're not worried about, you know, any fading or anything, you want them to use the quilt, just put some simple care instructions on there that say, you know, wash and dry as you normally would, or whatever.
We've also talked about it's nice if you're going to give a gift of a quilt. So in addition to those instructions, giving them a box of color catchers.
Right.
Because I do usually put a color catcher, which is used to be made by Shout. Now it's made by Woolite. Is that correct? Anyway, but you find them in the grocery store, just where you find your, you know, detergent
laundry
and stuff.
Supplies.
But it looks like a dryer sheet is what it looks like. But you actually put it in the wash, and then it catches any of those
kind of errant dyes that are flying
yeah.
around. Yeah, so. And I go ahead and throw it in the dryer as well when I do my dryer. I just take the color catcher and it goes in the dryer with the washed quilt.
So. I do too. I don't yeah. know if you're supposed to, but I put it in there.
And sometimes
well.
It's kind of fun to see what it looks like afterward. You know, oftentimes it's if you've got a red and blue quilt, your color catcher is going to look purple when it comes out because it's a combination of those two dyes. So at that point, I'm really thankful that I've, you know, thrown one in and
yeah.
it makes a big difference. So.
Well, and sometimes I am ridiculous and I put in like two or three. I don't. It says
I
you're only
too.
Supposed
yeah.
to put one. In,
yeah.
But I'll put in a couple. So.
And I think, again, going back to your point about if it's a quilt to be used, care instructions versus it's an heirloom. You know, you spend a lot of time on applique and, you know, you don't necessarily want to throw it in the washer and dryer. And again, if it's depends on what look you're looking for and also the kind of stitching that you've done on it, I think also can dictate what you're washing and drying
yeah.
could be.
And some of those quilts that I have done, some of that extra stitching or applique, hand applique, those are my wall quilts anyway, so they hang on my wall. And besides, you know, kind of maybe shaking out or putting in the sun like you're putting outside or doing the thing with the vacuum, you know, they don't need a lot of that care because they're not going to get dirty when they're hanging on the wall. So.
Right, right.
Well, thanks, guys. We'll be back after the commercial break with the editors to answer more of your questions. Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Like American Patchwork and Quilting on Facebook for daily quilting inspiration, tips, and giveaways. Find us at facebook.com/APQ magazine. See our editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on videos.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more.
Hi, and
visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Elizabeth and Jody, and we're answering more reader questions.
Okay, so another question that we got was, what is a reliable marking tool?
And I think that's great. And I think when people are asking that question, they're thinking in terms of, I have my quilt top done, and now I need to figure out how am I going to finish it. And specifically with a marking tool, probably how am I going to quilt it. So this is something that I think you've had a lot more experience in probably than I have. I'm basically a topper. I like to make the quilts, and then I'm kind of on to the next thing. But I think both of us have some ideas as far as what we like as a reliable marking tool when we're getting ready to mark those designs on a quilt top in preparation for either hand or machine quilting.
Mm-hmm. So, let's see. So, one thing I like is, actually, I do a lot of straight line quilting, or I used to do a lot of straight line quilting on my home machine, and so I do just use painter's tape, or specifically the quarter-inch masking tape made for quilting. But again, if I want wider lines, I often just use blue painter's tape. And it's just, you don't stitch through it, so make sure you're not doing that. I've done that too often, and then I have to pick out little bits of little bits of tape. But I have had the best success with doing it right before I'm doing the quilting. So not leaving it on forever. So,
and I think that's the thing that's nice about the painter's tape, and why we specifically mention that, is that it's a low-tack tape. So it's not the same as masking tape. And I've tried that before, too. She's gotten the masking tape out in a pinch and used that. And there definitely is a difference between that and the low-tack painter's tape.
Especially super old masking tape.
Yes.
Again, ask me how I know. Yeah, that's got some weird stickiness.
And I think in addition to the painter's tape, another thing that we forget about is that many of our sewing machines come with a guide that you can attach to your whatever foot you're using or to the part of your sewing machine that you're sewing at. And that will give you a guide as far as doing straight line stitching as well. And I think a lot of us forget about that, that we can check in our toolbox of things that we have and don't necessarily need to go out and buy something or have a fancy, you know, add-on. It's actually part of the things that you get with your sewing machine.
Some other things that I've used while for quilting. Actually, some of these work both for quilting as well as, like, things you want while you're piecing. So, you know, you're going to do some marking, possibly if you're making, like, triangle squares and you're marking a line on the back of that, or if you're doing stitch and flip corners for, like, a snowball block or something like that. So these don't only apply to quilting, but I guess basically what we're talking about now are marks that you want to come out. So, as opposed to, you know, obviously permanent ones. So, I personally love the friction pens. That's F-R-I-X-I-O-N. It's a new-ish kind of pen out in the last several years. And it goes away when you iron it. So I use that a lot for triangle squares. I haven't used it yet for quilting, but I have used a very similar thing, which is the Ultimate Marking Pencil. That's the same material that's in the Pounce pads, if you've ever used those, but it's in like a stick, or, you know, it's in like a pencil, but that irons off as well. So I think
the friction pens are nice because they come in different colors. So they come in black and blue and red and green. And
bright pink. Yes. I use a bright pink, actually, on dark fabrics.
And I've used one recently in helping place appliques on a block that I've been working on. And the friction pen works really nice for getting those pieces kind of laid out and figured out where they're supposed to go before I actually start fusing down or ironing down some of those applique pieces.
So did you put it on like a light table?
I did. Yeah, I put my pattern and then on top of a light box and then put my block or my foundation on top of it and then just kind of roughed out where the pieces should go with the friction pen.
And you wanted to use a pen that would go away just in case, like, you weren't
right, if there was
perfectly
any see-through or, I got too wide on a line somewhere or something, I knew that marking was going to go away. And you mentioned the Pounce. You know, that's also something you can use with stencils. And so for those that aren't familiar with it, it's like a little pad that has some, like, almost like chalk material in it.
It kind of feels like if you ever wiped off, like, a chalkboard, you know, like, with, you know, the eraser.
The residue,
Yeah, it feels like that. It's like you're holding this chalk eraser and
Yeah, and then you just use the stencil on top of your quilt top or whatever you're using and just kind of pounce that little pad on top of there and it leaves the mark. But it comes off easy enough as well. The thing you don't want to do is probably mark a whole quilt with something like that and then fold it up and put it away and not start working on it because sometimes, you know, over time that pounce marking might be gone or things have kind of folded up and you've got marks in places you don't necessarily want them to be.
And then there's also, you know, the good old standby, the wash-away blue pen that, you know, I use that for small things. Like, I wouldn't mark a whole quilt top with it, but I've used that before, especially with stencils, just to have it on there.
And I like the chalk marker, too. I actually use a chalk marker quite a bit, and that comes in different colors. It comes in blue and white and yellow. So that's the nice thing about a lot of these things, that they do come in different colors. So if you're working on a light background or a dark background, you've got options in terms of what color you want to use.
But again, a lot of this is personal preference, so you're going to have to try it out and see what you like and what you don't like. So kind of similar to that question, we have some questions about how do you write on fabric for like quilt labels or, again, things that you want to stay permanently in your quilt?
You know, I have used a micron pen, and again, that comes with a different width tip, so you can get those in different sizes. I think one of the things, depending on whatever kind of tool you use, it makes a difference on the kind of fabric you're writing on as well. So we've talked about maybe like concert t-shirts and you have an autograph on there. That's a knit. That may be different than a piece of cotton that you're writing on for a signature quilt. Or a label of some kind. Sometimes it's good to have a foundation. So it's not even in combination of what you're writing with, it's also using maybe a piece of freezer paper.
So what you're writing on.
Yeah,
as well.
That helps gives you that stability of your fabric, and it makes that writing a little easier.
And actually, this is one case in which, going all the way back to what we were talking about pre-washing, if I was going to, when I do make quilt labels, I do wash that fabric because I want all of the any residue or anything or start sizing or out of that fabric before I write on it. I also do quite a bit of printing on fabric. So with an inkjet printer, you know, making there's so much software out there right now. You know, you can make quilt labels or even just put it in your word processing software, and you know, it's much better than my lovely rotten handwriting. So I like to do that with just printing it out. And you can buy stuff, you know, ready-made for that. So like Printed Treasures is one of my favorites. And it's, you know, fabric that's already adhered to a piece of paper and it's already set. Or I'm sorry, it's the fabric is already treated and ready to kind of accept that ink. I've also used, again, it's something that's a good old thing, but it still works. It's a bubble jet set, and you can make your own fabric kind of prepared for dyeing, I guess, is what you would call that-ish. So, yeah.
And I know that there's also a lot of fabric markers out there out on the market, too, in a variety of colors that you can use that are color fast and you don't have to worry about them fading. But I know one thing that I usually do with any marking that I'm doing, either if it's a label or if there's an autograph on a t-shirt, is heat set it. And so I just take my iron and usually from the back so that the ink isn't coming off on my iron. But usually I like to heat set any kind of label or ink or anything that I've maybe treated differently the fabric than the way it originally came.
And a lot of things will tell you that for the instructions, so make sure you read the instructions if you're using a product or certain fabric markers. But yeah, you're right, I do that even with things that don't tell you to do it. I do a lot of
yeah before you put it in the washer and dryer, just heat set it, have a little iron press on it, and that'll help set that ink. Well, one of the most frequently questions that we get, frequently asked questions we get is, you know, what is your crafts lab really like? And do you guys get to sew every day? Is that what you do at work, is sit in the crafts lab and sew? Well, you can probably tell by our laugh, that's probably not what we do every day. You want to kind of tell them a little bit about our crafts lab?
Yeah, we are just so lucky to have a space in which we've got machines from a lot of different manufacturers. We've also got a lot of fabric from a lot of different manufacturers, and it's where we can go to try out techniques, where we can go, you know, to test a block if a reader's having having trouble with something, or we do shoot a lot of videos in there. So it's a great space where we can go do work, but also we get to go in there sometimes and be creative. So once in a while we'll have, you know, like actually we've had a lot of pillowcase making things for our million pillowcase challenge. So we do get to sew in there, but no, we don't sit around and sew every day.
The great thing is, because we call it a crafts lab, it really is like a laboratory, and we have bins that are all marked with different kinds of thread, needles, We have different kinds of tools, whether it's scissors or rotary cutters or mats, and we just get an opportunity to go in there and try things out, because similar to the Better Homes and Gardens Test Kitchen, where they test their recipes in different kinds of ovens and different kinds of crock pots, we're also testing tools and making sure that we get the best things when we're suggesting things in our favorite finds or the stuff we love. We want to make sure that it is actually our favorite and our stuff that we love. And so we do actually test the different tools and things that you see in those columns in our crafts lab.
Mm-hmm.
And the companies are great about sending us things so that we have an opportunity to try them out in an actual sewing environment.
Mm-hmm.
We also, people assume that we sit in there and sew every day. And that's not probably really what we spend our time. Again, we are testing things as we're trying out patterns and instructions and that kind of thing. But I know for me personally, most of my sewing gets done in the morning. I get up early and sew a little bit. My boys are pretty active in sports, and so the evenings and weekends are usually spent on a field somewhere or in a gym. And so my time to sew is in the morning typically. But Elizabeth, I know that's not when you usually get up and sew.
Yeah, I'm not a morning person, so I do a lot of sewing either. Like, I come home after work, and that's actually one of my most relaxing things. So, I came home on last Friday night and actually worked on making a couple blocks, and it was, like, just a good start to the weekend. I actually didn't do any more sewing the rest of the weekend, but that was my time for doing that. So, yeah, Friday nights are actually, I'm so wild and exciting. Yeah, Friday night sewing.
So we know your time to sew is different as well, and that you fit it in when you can. And when you have more questions, be sure and send them to us on our Facebook page, so we have a chance the next segment that we have to answer some of your questions as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys. We'll be back after the break with editor Jody Sanders to discuss a new issue on newsstands.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once you've determined the block placement in a quilt, take a picture of the layout with your phone or digital camera. Look at the picture to make sure you still love the layout, as having a different perspective can sometimes make you see things you haven't before. Once your layout is final, refer to the image as you sew to ensure the blocks remain in their desired positions.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg. Join me in 2015 for a brand new video series called Show Me How, brought to you by Baby Lock. Each month, I'll show you how to complete a simple project from start to finish. Learn new techniques, see tips, and sew a great project. Visit allpeoplequilt.com/videos to watch.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. I'm here with editor Jody Sanders from Quilts and More magazine, and we're here to talk about the new fall issue that just hit newsstands last week. Hi, Jody.
Hello. Well, it's always fun to come on and talk about our latest issue that's on newsstands. And we'll tell you a little bit about the cover first, so you know what you're looking for when you go to your local quilt shop or bookstore to find the issue. Quilts and More is newsstand only, so you do need to go to purchase it. On our cover, typically we have one main image that takes up about two-thirds of the cover, and then on the right-hand side, there is about a third of a column, and we feature three more projects. So you really get a sense of the variety of things in the magazine. And in this case, we're actually featuring two projects on our main image, which is pretty exciting for us. And it is from our scrap lab. And for those that aren't familiar with our scrap lab concept, we give three designers the same set of materials and ask them to come up with something different. They don't know what each other is doing. They don't see each other's project until the magazine actually hits the newsstand. So it's a surprise for them as well. They do let me know in general what they're making so that, you know, they'll tell me a bag or a table runner or a pillow. So we don't end up with three of the same thing on the cover. So we do have a few rules in terms of they check in with me first to make sure that we don't have all the same projects. And then they're given, like I mentioned, the same set of materials. And so we have two contributing designers for all of the issues in 2015. And that's Sherry Falls from This and That Patterns and Monique Dillard from Open Gate Quilts. And they are the ones that are kind of our constant. And then we have a guest designer that comes in, and that's the third person. And for this particular issue, it's Pam Buddha of Heartspun Quilts, and we're using Pam's collection called Treenware and Berries from Marcus, and it's just a really great collection of kind of a three basic colors of kind of a cranberry red and a chocolatey brown and some really pretty creamy tan.
Perfect for fall.
It really is, and it says fall without being orange and black, and you know, it's just a really pretty collection. And we gave each of the three designers a grouping of 10-inch squares. So they had those 10-inch squares to then come up with their project. And the three projects that they came up with is Sherry designed a tote bag, and it's just got tons of detail. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And then Monique made a table runner, and Pam created a throw. And so those are the three projects for the scrap lab this time. And two of those are on the cover. The two that are on the cover, the instructions are in the magazine itself. And then Pam's throw that she made, that is actually on our website. It's an exclusive project, and it's on our allpeoplequilt.com website. And it's allpeoplequilt.com/144 or 144, and you can find Pam's instructions and materials list for her project there. So we have the two projects on the cover, the tote bag, the table runner from the Scrap Lab Designer Challenge, and then the three additional projects we have on the right-hand side sidebar are a trick-or-treating tote. It's from Kim Christofferson of Kimberbell Designs, and if you know Kim, she just designs really whimsical and cute and fun projects. In this case, we used her Mind Your Mummy collection from Maywood Studios, and it's just a really super cute collection. Definitely Halloween themed. Has spiders and witches and all kinds of cute Halloween colors of black and orange and purple and lime green. And Kim designed four different, it's one tote bag, one design, but in four different colorways. And we've got a couple of trick-or-treaters on the cover with their super cute tote bags. And then we have an applique project. It's a close-up of a project that was done by Lynette Anderson. And it was using Lynette's Spiced Pumpkin collection for RJR Fabrics. And the thing I love about this project is it combines so many different things. So we have piecing, we have applique, we have some machine applique, we've got yo-yos, we've got some embroidery, and there's also some wooden buttons in the shapes of pumpkins and cats and stars, and those buttons are designed by Lynette as well. So we tell you, don't be a scaredy cat, try applique. So I think that's just a really fun project.
Yeah, and it's a small table topper, so you can just try all of these different techniques without investing in a huge project.
Definitely. And it's a mix of piecing and applique, so you can try it on a small scale and decide if you like that particular technique or not. It's a great kind of starter project. And then the final image on the cover is a two-block quilt from Victoria Finley Wolf, and it has the two blocks. There's a square and a square block that's combined with an hourglass block. And if you're not familiar with Victoria's quilts, I think what she does so well is combine classic traditional patterns with a very contemporary look and the way she sets them together, the fabric that she combines. It's just very striking, very contemporary, and yet it leans back on some of those traditional blocks that we're familiar and comfortable with. And the thing I love about Victoria is it's very well thought out. I mean, she, you know, pays homage to her grandmother who helped her inspire her to start quilting. I mean, Victoria went to art school and, you know, didn't think probably 20 years ago that this was the route that she was going to be taking. But it's really fun to see her quilts involved in our quilt magazine. And the fact that we can feature a portion of it on the cover is just really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about some of the projects inside.
Okay. So that's what you're looking for on the cover. We kind of think as our autumn issue is our back to school time. So we are trying to give you lots of different ways to use different tools or different techniques. And we're always kind of searching for new ways to help you improve your skills. It might be in quilting or sewing or embroidery. Again, it's quilts and more. So it's not just the quilts part, but it's also the and more part that we want to share with you and help you learn more about or try something new and different. You know, maybe you've always been a piecer and applique is not something you're interested in. Well, we're going to try and provide some kind of simple projects for you to give it a try and just see if maybe you do like it, but you just never thought that you did.
Perfect.
Some of the things that we've included in the issue, again, I mentioned is embroidery and yo-yos. Those are some hand stitching techniques. So if you want to give yourself a try, we've also got some felting or some felted cuffs, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. As we have in the previous issues of 2015, we also are including the next block in our Sew Easy Sampler series. And this particular block, again, these blocks have been made by Sandra Clemens. And the previous blocks that we made, we did a rail fence, which was kind of a real basic first-time block for people to do. And then we did a pinwheel version of a block. And the third block that's in this autumn or fall issue is a courthouse steps version of a log cabin block. So we've taken squares and rectangles and put them together and just made a really fun next block in the series, I think. And these are made in solids from the Michael Miller Cotton Couture collection. Just really beautiful solids to work with in colors of fuchsia and lime green and teal and gray. Just a really contemporary set of colors, I think.
And the fun part is this is actually a sew-along we're hosting. So if you want to see what other people are doing with their fabrics or their blocks, you can find on Instagram and Facebook if you use the hashtag QAMSewAlong. You can see all the pictures that people are uploading.
And because we know that the color combination might not be something that everybody wants to do in the magazine, in addition to the things that we have on Instagram and Facebook, we also have two more color options in the magazine. So there's a color option that uses a very romantic florals, roses, with some kind of pinks and grays and lavenders, and a darker mauve. Kind of just a really romantic version. And then there's another version that's primary colors of blue and yellow and red. And that's an American Jane collection called Fresh Air for Moda Fabrics. And that's, you know, just a very different look. So you get three kind of different looks and options for those blocks. And the fun thing is you could take any one of the blocks that we've shown and maybe set three of them together to make a really nice table runner, too.
Oh, that would be so nice.
So if there's one block you don't like, you can go ahead and just take three of one that you really do like and put those together to make a table runner. The blocks themselves are pretty good size. They're 16 inches finished. So it could even make maybe a placemat or the center of a candle mat or something if you wanted to use it in that way as well. It's really started out as kind of a way to help people get into sewing that maybe didn't know different techniques and just give them different ways to put blocks together. I mentioned the Tricks for Treats bags that we have from Kim Christofferson, and we also have a tote bag as our color option in that. So if you don't want to make it for trick-or-treaters, it's still a really great pattern in and of itself, and you can go ahead and change out the fabrics for the kind of fabrics you want to use, whether it's a market bag or you know, maybe you want to put your knitting supplies or sewing supplies in it and take it to quilt group. Lots of options.
It's a great use for those novelty fabrics you've been saving.
It really is. There's a cute pocket on the outside, so if you wanted to feature a particular print or something, it's a great way to have an outside pocket and also feature a particular fabric. One more thing I want to talk about real quickly before we end this segment is another feature that we're including as a series in the 2015, and that is Changing Seasons from Sherry McConnell. And these are wall hangings that all finish about 21 inches, 18 to 21 inches square. So if you want to make one, and they are seasonally based, so this one has fall-inspired colors of teal and orange and brown and a burgundy color, but they're all set about the same size. So if you want to change them out for each of the seasons, we're going to give you one that'll fit for that particular season. These blocks are super cute. They're churn dash, a variation of a churn dash block that finishes at 4.5 inch
square. They're so cute.
They really are fun. And we do have a couple of color options for that as well. We've got a version that Jan Regaler made that's very spring-like. It's baby blue and pink and green and yellow, so it has a very different look from Sherry's version. And then I also made a version with some Joe Morton fabrics, kind of a variety of collections from Joe for Andover, and that has a little darker background and border, and so it's very similar in terms of color to the original, but it has the dark sashing and the dark border instead of light. So just a way to show people how to use similar fabrics in a different way.
Love it. Well, we'll be back after the commercial to keep talking about the projects and quilts more.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, Rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Linda Augsburg, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making pillowcases and creating smiles. For people who love to sew or quilt, it's so easy to lift spirits and bring smiles to hospitalized kids, homeless families, and others in need. Simply join American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine's 1 Million Pillowcase Challenge. Make one, two, or more pillowcases and donate them in your local community. You'll create just as many smiles. Join the movement today. Find complete details, download free patterns, and record your donations online at allpeoplequilt.com/million pillowcases.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to the American Patchwork and Quilting Podcast. I'm here with Jody Sanders, and we're talking about quilts and more fall.
You know, we're all inspired by different things, I think, to make our quilts. And one of my favorite projects in the issue is a quilt called Framed, and it's from designer Heather Scrimshire. And Heather was inspired by the molding on a traditional fireplace mantle. So kind of the squares and rectangles when you think of a mantle, and there was some molding on it. She took a picture of it, and she thought, you know what, I want to make a quilt someday. Well, the quilt that she made looks totally different than the molding in terms of a color. You know, that original photograph had browns and creams and white in it. And the quilt that Heather has made is using Kona cotton solids. And it's beautiful blues and aquas and light blues and a stark white. And it's just a very striking quilt.
Yes, it is.
It's one block that's repeated 12 times. And so it's just a really fantastic interpretation of something that, you know, you maybe wouldn't think of. And it's interesting because Heather loves to take photographs. She's a really astute observer of her surroundings. And she actually has a book with Martingale that's called Graphic Quilts from Everyday Images. And she's taken things like chain link fences and thorns on a bush, beads on a necklace, and those are just a few of the ordinary items that she's taken photographs of and then made quilts based on images that she took and those photographs. I just think it's a really fascinating.
That's so fun.
And it's just a great reminder to all of us, I think, that there are things all around us every day that we can be looking at and can inspire us to make quilts that we're, if you're not paying attention, you just kind of walk right by a chain link fence and don't think about it as being inspiration. But it's a really great book, and if you have an opportunity, check that out. We have a quilt from Lynette Jensen. Many of you will remember Lynette as the designer of Thimbleberries. She had fabric for RJR Fabrics for many years, and the Thimbleberries patterns, and we're just really fortunate to have a quilt from her in our issue, and it's called Logging On, and it is a log cabin variation. Again, it's two different blocks put together, and it's very scrappy, which is really fun. You can dig into your scrap box or trade strips with friends if you don't have a real good selection of scraps. I think for this particular quilt, it's the more the merrier. Mm-hmm. You know, you very much want to have lots of options when you're putting those log cabin blocks together. We also have a really fun bag from Laura Jacinto, and we're calling it twofold. It's got a lot of wonderful details. It's got grommets, and it's got some lobster claw clasps, and there's actually a way to fold the bag so that you get two looks from it. One's a little more boxy, and then the other one is a little more tailored, I guess I would say. And the fabrics are from the Low Country Indigo collection from Nancy Gear for Wyndham. And it's a beautiful blue and white, large kind of damask pattern. And they have used the linen version of the fabric, which I think is really great. A lot of companies now are coming out with both cotton version and then a cotton linen. And the cotton linen is a little heavier, and it is great for home deck things, great for bags, great for pillows, if you want to make it for curtains. But I especially love the little extra weight it gives to a bag. Most of us use some kind of interfacing or iron-on fleece or something to give those bags a little extra body, but I think the linen is just really a nice look.
And I love this tote because you can keep it, the smaller version, for just, you know, everyday carrying things. But if you're going to the market or you're, you know, you need to pack some extra things, you can make it a little bigger and fit a lot more in there. Yeah.
Yeah. Very roomy. We try to always include a baby quilt or a kid's quilt in Quilts and More because we know that's how a lot of people come to quilting, is by making that first baby quilt. And we have an adorable little quilt in this issue that we call Who Loves You, Baby? And it features a fabric collection by a mother-daughter duo who are designing fabrics for RJR. And it's the Woodland Park Collection. And it includes owls and mushrooms and birds. And it's got a print that has deer and bear. And it's very whimsical and very childlike.
It's so cute.
And it's really cute. And the base of the quilt itself is strips of fabric. So it's very easy to put together. And then the center of it has some very simple applique shapes that if you want to add that to kind of spice it up a little bit, you can. But they're really adorable. There's a lot of really fun quilting in it. And we just love this quilt. We think it's a great way for people to kind of make that first quilt. And again, you can decide if you want to add the appliques to it or not. A very beautiful fall-inspired quilt is called Rustling Leaves by Sue Michaels of Dragonfly Fiber Art. And it combines a combination of Timeless Treasures batiks. And they are just stunning. It's rust and gold and green. And then there are black triangles, triangle squares with cream that kind of march across the diagonal of the quilt, and it gives it a very graphic appeal. But it's just a really beautiful quilt. It's basically two blocks of squares and triangle squares that are put together. But I think the beautiful batiks just really make this quilt.
Yeah, they sparkle.
A new technique that we have, or a new product that we're featuring in the magazine, is in a project that we're calling Rhapsody in Wool. And it's taking felted wool and doing a little bit of applique on a rectangular base. And then you mold it around a product that's called Heat Moldable Double-Sided Fusible Interfacing by Bozzle. And what happens is when you heat that product, it molds to the shape of whatever you want it to mold to. And in this case, it's to make a cuff or a bracelet. So once you get your base done and your applique and any kind of hand stitching that you might want to do for the outside of the cuff, you adhere it to this heat moldable double-sided interfacing product, and then you adhere like an iron or a hairdryer can be used as well, and you mold it around your wrist, and it takes that shape. And so it's a really fun design from Tammy Silvers of Tamarini's, and Tammy is offering a kit. So if you want to just kind of try it out and maybe not buy a whole package of the product, I think this is a great way to try something like this out.
Yes, it is. And I modeled the bracelet, so I can say they're very comfortable and they're so cute, and you could easily get addicted to making many of them.
Right, because you can use whatever. I mean, we give you three different versions of the bracelet in terms of applique shapes, but you certainly could use anything that you wanted to on the felted wool outer portion of it. And then the nice thing about it is they are pretty adjustable, so depending on whatever your wrist size is, you kind of mold them to your size wrist to make it comfortable for you to wear. So, and again, Tammy is offering a kit for that, so if you want to try that out, be sure and contact her. One of the other things that we have every issue is called One Block Three Ways, and it's where we take a specific block, and in this case we're using the Friendship Star, and it's a 6-inch Friendship Star block. And if you want to find the block, it's again on our website at allpeoplequilt.com, and so you just go to allpeoplequilt.com/143, and that'll give you instructions for a 6-inch Friendship Star block. And we used fabrics from Moda Fabrics in the Canyon Collection, which was a coral and a teal. And we kind of talked about how opposites attract. So you take colors that are opposite of each other on the color wheel and combine them, and that makes a really nice striking block. We also used a collection from Connecting Threads that's called Line Dried, and that's from Mama's Cottons. Kind of a 30s, 40s vintage inspired collection, and just combining three of those fabrics, a floral and a large plaid or check, and then kind of a little ditzy print, and putting those together. Low volume, not a lot of contrast, but we did fussy cut the center square to kind of give it a little more dimension and a little more interest with the low volume and the low contrast there. And then finally we used the Ex Libris collection by Allison Glass for Andover for our final block. And instead of having a light background, we had a dark background. And used for the star points, we used one print and just took different parts of the print that were different colors and use those for the star point. So I think just a really fun way to look at a block. And also, anytime you're looking at a quilt and you say, oh, I don't really like that quilt, look at it again. Is it really the quilt you don't like, or is it the colors that you don't like? And maybe by just changing out the colors or the way that you position the colors, lights and darks, that can really make a difference in the look of a quilt. And maybe it's not the quilt you don't like, but it's maybe the fabrics you just need to change out.
Yeah, that's a great reminder.
The other thing is we have pillows. We know Home Deck is really popular with people as well. So there's an option of some pinwheel pillows using gray, a mottled gray, and a mottled lime green, and just combining a basic pinwheel block in different ways to make some 14-inch square pillows. And again, the great thing about this pattern is you can switch out and make one pinwheel or two pinwheels or four pinwheels. It's really kind of up to you. And to make it look totally different for our color option, we've used the Speedway collection from Northcott Fabrics. And it's a collection for little boys, probably. It's got lots of race cars on it and bright colors. And we made a kid's quilt with the pinwheels. And that's just kind of, a fun way to show you a different way to look at a pattern that if you're not interested in making pillows, I'd love to make a little kid's quilt.
Awesome.
The other thing I want to remind you on each of our issues in 2015 is that on our very back page, we're also doing a what should I pack? And this time we're doing what's a basic sewing kit. So if you're signed up to go to a class somewhere, one of the things you might be asked to bring in addition to your sewing machine and your iron and a ironing board or pressing station is a BSK. And you're like, BSK, what is that? I have no idea what that means. Well, BSK stands for Basic Sewing Kit. And so we've included some things that we as a staff feel like it's important to have in a basic sewing kit. Things like scissors, shears, different marking pencils, your rotary cutter with a fresh blade, thread, a seam ripper. Unfortunately, we all probably need to include one of those. Find one that you like and fits well in your hand because you'll be using it. An extra package of sewing machine needles, some pins, a pin cushion. Those are all good things to include in your basic sewing kit.
Mm-hmm. And it's perfect if you have kids going off to college to pack them one of those so they can do some basic repairs and some basic sewing. Well, awesome. We are so happy to have you on the show, Jody. And we'll be back next week with Pat Sloan. We'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.